Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Trankelberg and Andre Kleiner. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Fred.
Hey, you mentioned when we were setting up the date for this the other day that you were just coming back from, was it a whole weekend where you were working with ASQ on reviewing test questions?
This was a two-day workshop, including Saturday. So it's basically Friday and Saturday.
Friday, Saturday, okay.
Workshop they hold at their headquarters in the middle of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an impressive building, and it's pretty comfortable getting. I remember they had free Wi-Fi, and the coffee was pretty good, so I was happy.
Yeah, this was a pretty interesting experience for me. I know you've done similar workshops in the past, but this was the first time I was participating in one part of this process, which is called test review. Mm-hmm. And I was actually quite impressed. I knew it's not a simple process to basically put together a CRE exam, but I was impressed how much rigor goes into the process and actually how many people involved in basically putting together questions and in releasing the CRE test.
Oh, it's quite a machine. The parts I've touched have been in the writing questions they send out. Once you become a CRE, you can expect within the next couple of years to get an invite to contribute draft questions, to write questions. And they give you a huge document about the format, the structure of questions, the different levels of question answer, you know, writing good questions versus not, having a reference, all in working out good, they call them distractors, the reasonably good bad or wrong answers, plausible bad answers. And I use that in my CRE prep course when I talk about, you know, working through sample exam questions, is that you should always figure out why the distractors are there. You know, if it's a math problem, what error could you have made that would get that answer? And it makes each question four times more useful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I was kind of impressed by amount of rigor our part was basically review every single question, which was, I think, created by other group of people, which was there like few months before. Mm-hmm. and kind of see if those are good questions, those good distractors. And the thing is, it's not an easy job to put together questions, good questions and good distractors. So we basically edited pretty much every single question which went through our group.
Oh, man. Well, what would be like without, you know, revealing any of the questions, which I'm fairly certain you're bound not to do.
Right, yeah, you signed the agreement.
But, I mean, what are the, one of the things I remember in the instructions and in writing questions is that sometimes if I'm in a particular industry, the way we use terminology or the way we approach a particular task is a little bit different than, say, the oil and gas industry or the automotive industry or other industries. Whereas the questions are for people that are in, you don't know what industry. Was that ever an issue?
Yes, absolutely. It's an issue. And actually, there were several questions we've changed because different industry kind of doing things differently. And one of the easiest example is the term validation, and mm-hmm. this was not part of the exam, so I can use this. But actually, different industry mean different things by the term validation. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. like validating the product, in the automotive industry, it's basically when product ready to go, then you validate it, making sure everything is okay. where, like in some other industries, validation is done a lot earlier in the process. And we ran into those things. And actually, like when we were doing our homework, there were a lot of comments coming from the people participating in this. And okay, this may be like some distractor, which actually may be a right answer, correct answer in the particular industry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I made a couple of comments like that saying, okay, this is actually true for the automotive industry, even though I know it's not the correct answer to that
right.
question.
Well, that makes it tough, doesn't it? Is that we're all using the same language by and large, yet it's locally adopted. And that could be by industry or even by local practice.
Yeah, and that's why it's much easier to deal with quantitative questions where it's this normal distribution and it's the same pretty much in any industry.
That's so true. Yeah, it's hard to argue with math in a lot of cases. Unfortunately, I think the body of knowledge calls for a big emphasis on probability and statistics. Yet the feedback I'm getting from students when they sit for the exams is that there's not a lot of math in it. And I'm hearing that from both the CQE and the CRE, is that the math was they didn't struggle with it at all, and there wasn't a big burden to them. I wonder if there's in the scope of the questions you saw, was there a proportional good amount of math questions?
Actually, no, but I asked specifically about this, and again, the questions we were going through did not reflect actual exam, because I asked specifically because there was really small number of quantitative questions,
mm-hmm.
and the answer I got that basically they already had enough questions, quantitative questions in their database, and they were more concerned about kind of practical application questions,
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
How you use FMEA and how you calculate something in FMEA, stuff like that,
mm-hmm,
where
mm-hmm.
you actually need to do any calculations, but just give an answer.
Mm-hmm. Understanding concepts more.
Understanding concept and application of that concept.
Well, now the review process, you were looking at questions that were already drafted. And I know firsthand that they have a pretty rigorous process of training people, basically providing plenty of material and question and formats and templates to draft the questions. Now, you mentioned the database. So the questions all dump into a big server someplace. We should get a hold of some of your Russian friends, Andre, and see if we can get hacked into that. just kidding. So this huge data, now back in the earlier days, decades ago, ASQ would publish the exam after people would sit for it. So they would create 150 questions, and then shortly after the exam date, it would be made public what the questions were. And then they have to make another 150 questions for 6 months later for the next exam cycle. They don't do that anymore. And from what I understand, part of that process is that they use marker questions, basically, to with different mixes in the 150 questions that a person would see on their exam. But there's a handful of questions that are used on multiple exams so that they can level the scoring and create the whole process of scoring these things is not just there's 150 questions. If you get 130 right, you pass, because every mix of questions may have a different a difficulty level. And that part of the whole process is fascinating to me, is how they go about grading and scoring these exams. And I'm going to come back to your test review process, because the questions need to be at a certain level of, I don't know, not difficulty. What's the Bloom taxonomy, where it's the certain level of applied or understand or at those kind of things? Did those connect together at all? Did you discuss how many we need to go in different levels?
No, we didn't talk about levels. And I don't think, again, I don't have all the information. I don't think this is a big part of the test where they, kind of group questions into different difficulty category. I mean, for one question, you get 1 point, and that's the way it works. But again, this is kind of maybe outdated information, but you're right. They had like each exam might have exactly the same questions, maybe 10 questions or 15 questions. And they kind of used to judge or compare the tests, mm-hmm. Like compare the people, I mean, groups taking those questions and kind of assessing the difficulty of the test. But from what I understand now, it's like they operate a little bit differently. So okay. There's a big, big database. And for example, if you fail the test, you'll get some information about, okay, which part of the body of knowledge you didn't score well, mm-hmm. but you won't get correct answers. But actually, if you retake your exam, let's say 6 months later, the high probability that you're going to get different questions because somehow it makes it to the database and that you've taken this exam fairly recently in mm-hmm. in get like a version B or something.
Well, they're now in most of the, well, in the North America anyway, it's being done electronically in computer centers. And
right.
So they, you could be sitting next to somebody and have completely different sets of questions.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's good. That's good. I think it gives a lot more flexibility, to the whole exam taking and exam administering mm-hmm, process.
Mm-hmm. So which are the what were the toughest questions to deal with? Was it the industry differences or what are the things did you notice about the questions that as a group, your team there had the most discussion on?
Again, without revealing any details, there were 11 people, and most of the time, and again, keep in mind, we did not study for that exam. I mean, we're all CREs, of course, mm-hmm. But again, it's like you, certain things you forget, and also what's also important in CRE exam is that you in your job, you do not apply 100% of that body of knowledge. I mean, I don't think that a person exists who actually uses 100% of that body of knowledge.
Yeah, it's pretty broad.
It's pretty broad. And I would say realistically, about 40% of that material would apply. So like once you certify and time passes, I mean, certainly you forget some things. Mm-hmm. And again, we didn't have time to study. We barely had time to basically go through all those questions before the workshop and provide answers mm-hmm, and comments. Mm-hmm. So, and there were some questions where we almost kind of like uniform distribution, like two people pick this answer, two people pick that answer. Yeah. And then those were like really big red flags where like, okay, guys, I mean, something's wrong here, seriously, because
right.
we all got different answers.
And you can justify why you think it's the right answer. That's tough. Yeah.
And they all were qualitative, basically, kind of, yeah, procedural questions. I mean, how to apply this tool or that tool, and in what situation and mm-hmm. stuff like that. One thing was kind of interesting. Some of the reference materials actually kind of old, and some of the things have changed. But mm-hmm. since you have to have an answer kind of tied to certain reference material, and some of those practices changed, I think that's where we got most of the wrong answers, because those references were basically no longer reflecting the current practice in the industry. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. we made comments in saying, okay, maybe certain references should be removed from the reference list. It's just because they pretty old, like going to back to 70s.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a couple of mill standards that are that I've seen in different works, and people are referencing them. And I'm like, you know, you realize that standard has been deleted and discontinued. It's no longer relevant. You know, you're citing that now. Come on, come on, move on. Let's get. Now, it also speaks, though, to I think one of your other roles, though, Andre, is the editor for the Wiley series on reliability. is it quality and reliability or just reliability?
Quality
and reliability is that you need to have good titles and good practical, useful documents to cite for references. And, you know, I think there's a need for more of that. I don't think anybody's going to, I mean, I know that ASQ and Indiana Council both have books out that are for CRE preparation. I think ASQ's is the CRE handbook, if I remember right, by Bloom and somebody else. I think they're in their second edition.
Benbow.
And then the Quality Council of Indiana, they have CRE primers, these binders. But if I remember right, you, as a reference, you can't use the primer. And I never really understood the logic of that, because it's one that most people use that I know of anyway.
That's correct. Yeah. And yeah, you can't use primer for question generation and questions review. But the thing is, in primer, they also use kind of, at least they're supposed to use the same sources as original reference materials.
Well, you see that in there. They do a lot of, it's a heavily quoting book. It pulls out tables and it pulls out, you know, bullet lists. And I think your book with O'Connor is probably a third of the primer. It's got a lot of references and call outs and summaries of stuff that's in that book. I understand that. But anyway, I don't know what the process is for updating the reference list, because it seems massive. I think, did they have all of the reference there available to you?
There's a pretty big bookshelf with at least most of the references listed as recommended materials.
Well, what would you say was, did you have a chance to, is there any more recent ones? I mean, it's like, I'm sure your book, the fifth edition, is there. How about the third edition of Tobias and Trindade's book?
I didn't see it there. I mean, there's some older books like Wayne Nelson book is there, but I don't think it belongs, to be honest. It's a great book. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic book. Mm-hmm. But I think it's actually have a higher level material, which
very specific. You're talking about the accelerated testing.
Yes.
It's the Bible for that. But, yeah, and it that is. Would be one question on the CRE. So it's, you know,
if you put the question from Wayne Nelson's book to the CRE, I mean, this is probably not the right test.
That's right. But I mean, Wayne's come out with a more recent book talking about repairable systems, recurrent data. And again, it's a very specialized one, yet knowing the difference, and I think Tobias and Trindade talk about it too, and I think you guys mention it, is that I think the concept of when do you apply Weibull, and if you had the situation of a repairable system, and then the question was written, do you use the Weibull analysis, do you do this, do you do that, I think some of the older references say, well, just calculate MTBF. And I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff kind of mentioning MTBF and some of the things we needed to clarify.
I'm glad I wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think probably what we need to also mention is overall role of CRE on the profession. And I mean, overall, I think it's very positive. Mm-hmm. And like, I've taught a couple of courses teaching the CRE, I mean, preparing CREs internally inside the company, but I think it's very good. It kind of defines the standard, maybe not the standard, but the body of knowledge. The biggest kind of pushback I got from people when I was encouraging them to take CRE exam, they would say, oh, I looked through the body of knowledge and it's like at least half of this doesn't apply to my job. And like I said, this is true, and this is probably true for everybody. So like, for example, in my job, I rarely deal with maintenance or like repairable systems. I mean, I do a little bit, but still it's mostly I mean, non-repairable systems and design for reliability, physics of failure, that stuff. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's good to study and good to have this kind of widened horizons. And to be honest, I mean, you may change the job and get to the environment where now you start dealing exclusively with like reliability-centered maintenance or mm-hmm. or some availability instead of reliability and stuff like that. So I, like I said, I highly encourage everybody to take the exam. And it also helps, like, when you're looking for a job, because people recruiting or people hiring for those jobs, for reliability engineering jobs, they, most of them know what's in the body of knowledge, and they already know what to expect if you expect of you if you have that certification.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the subject for a whole nother discussion, I think, is what does the CRE mean in industry? Because, well, I'm going to leave it there. I think that's another whole topic that we could dive into. The process okay. itself, and it sounds like you had a good couple of days there and some good discussions. And I know it can be long when you have a whole pile of questions and a committee reviewing it. That can be a mind-numbing experience at times, I'm sure. But it all is good. It's the questions are drafted by CREs, by people in the industry and whole wide range of industry around the world. And then they're edited and vetted. And then they're selected for exams to get a good representation to examine the entire body of knowledge. And so then there's a whole nother process for scoring and grading and how they do all that. That's a whole different realm of statistics from what I understand.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, there's at least 4 workshops, which kind of in the way in that process before actually questions make it to the official exam. Mm-hmm. So it's like 4 different groups of people get together. And I mean, some work on body of knowledge, some develop questions, some review the question. Then there's also, I think, one workshop which actually finalizes the exam and say, okay, this is kind of good to go. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I, like I said, I was quite impressed by this process.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So anyway, well, let's wrap it up here. And as a listener, if you're thinking about doing the CRE or you've recently taken the test, you know, or you've been a CRE for years, you know, what's in it for you, basically? How has it made a difference for you? I often joke with students I'm teaching, Andre, is that once you get your CRE, you're going to get immediately promoted, get a company car in the corner office. You know, but don't be surprised if that might take 10, 15, 20 years. I think it's a personal milestone for many people to mark that. And so if you're listening and either you're thinking about it or had it, how has CRE played into your world and how has it manifest itself? I'm also, Andre, looking for snippets of what people think of the CRE, pros and cons. I think that would make a basis for a great discussion coming on.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Andre. Yeah, spending 2 days in ASQ headquarters, you know, at least they got comfortable chairs. So I think you probably survived all right.
Comfortable chair, they feed you, they house you, so yeah. It was all good.
It's all good. All right, great, Andre. We'll talk to you later then.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.